Good morning and welcome to The Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. And joining us today is Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and political consultant Libby Post, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, nice to have you all here. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. But if you make a nice, concise, quick email, Alan may read them a little later in the show, roundtable@wamc.org. Well, we'll start today with some distressing and not at all good news in South Korea. Arrest warrant issued for captain, two crew members of sunken South Korea ferry. An arrest warrant, this is from CNN, has been issued for the captain of the ferry that sank off the coast of South Korea, an accident that killed 28 people and left nearly 270 missing. Two other crew members also face arrest, a spokesman for the joint prosecutor and police investigators said today. A prosecutor said that the captain wasn't in the steering room when the ship started to sink. A third mate was at the helm. Now, the captain was one of at least 179 people rescued soon after the accident occurred. In a tragic twist, one of those rescued, a high school vice principal who was on board the ferry, along with more than 300 students, was found hanging from a tree. It looks like a suicide. Meanwhile, divers are racing to the scene and trying to get people out of there. They're pumping oxygen in. A terrible story that now has taken another turn. Mike Spain.
Well, you know, what I find stunning is that there's still hope that at least that they're demonstrating that by continuing to perform rescue services. And there may be some, you know, at least some good news that might come out of that. If there's people who are in the hull of the ship, might be in air pockets, et cetera, and they're doing everything they can. But, you know, to be sure, you know, this is going to be one of those. It just seems like what was the Casca Concordia, the Italian cruise ship that went tipped over because it went on ground. You know, it seems like every time there's a story like this, or even the Exxon Valdez, you know, it's a captain who wasn't at his post, you know, and it seems to be that they're implying that here or something related to that. And, I mean, why can't these guys just do their job? You know, they have important roles. And then, you know, of course, you know, the fact is that these are a micro of what really goes on, and there's safe transportation all the time. But boy, to be so negligent to let something like this happen.
Alan, an interesting parallel here now developing between the Flight 370 situation and here in South Korea with the ship, that the families of those possible survivors, possibly those who are now down with the ship, are extremely frustrated to the point of fury about the lack of information that's coming out of official channels.
Well, you know, the fury and the unhappiness that every parent can understand. I mean, my God, each of us who have children understand that this could have been us. The kids could have been on a school bus going somewhere. The kids could have been here or there. And you know, you just really understand how fickle life can be. It's awful. And so when you take a look at any of these tragedies, including the airliner or anything else, when people try to make something out of it, they try to explain it to themselves. And then inevitably, there is always going to be somebody who is identified as the bad guy. We don't have enough information. You haven't given us any information. What, you think if those folks had information, they wouldn't have given it? They would have. Sometimes they take way too long to do it. But you know, the search for the inevitable fall guy in each of these really, to me, doesn't make as much sense as understanding just how fickle life can be.
Libby?
Well, you know, people want the information immediately, and it's a product of the way we live now. You know, you sit on your couch with a smart TV, you can get online and get information 24/7, and information is available to all of us. And so when it's not being turned around as quickly as we're usually expected to be, and you couple that with not knowing whether your kids are alive, you know, it can get very frustrating. But it's And this is not to diminish any of the terror these parents must be going through. I mean, I can't even imagine. But you can't answer these questions in 2 minutes.
You're absolutely right.
And there needs to be some recognition of that, and that people are trying to find the answers and trying to do their due diligence to give them the right information. Because I wouldn't want to be told the wrong information and then, we made a mistake, you know, which is what happened in Malaysia. So.
Exactly. And I think that is a great point. At what point does the obligation of officials to get the information out there fast, at what point is that mitigated by the fact that they really don't know what's going on?
Right.
And the same for journalists who are reporting it, because there's probably a million rumors over there, and it really calls for restraint and verification so that you're not just reporting the latest wrinkle. I mean, we saw a lot of that in the Malaysia
airline. I can't tell you how many times I go to our local deli. Okay, I won't say who it is.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. It's public radio.
They've got CNN on, and it's the same flight 370-80 story on and on and on and on and on again. And I'm like, isn't there something else?
Well, you know, they were criticized a lot. I mean, they became the brunt of jokes at that at one point because, you know, one minor little increment was being, you know, we heard a ping. We heard yet another ping.
Yeah.
Ah, no pings today. You know, and it became, you know, a farce. But their ratings, isn't that right, Ray? Their ratings
zoomed. Well, I mean, I just turned CNN on here, and there you go. Yeah. I mean, we're in a simulated submarine.
Mystery of Flight 370.
In Vancouver looking at how it would be possible to find a black box. So, but this is clearly not exactly the same situation. They know where this ship is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They know what they have to do. The only question is anybody still alive? And then who was culpable?
And then the negligence involved, if there was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, the CNN factor here makes me yearn for the daily paper. Because at least you know.
You get a summary that's been vetted.
Right.
Of course, the problem with that is when that was vetted when
it
press rolled,
right.
Not when you know, you turn on your TV. Right. So that's one of the
And of course, there's a big difference between, each of our understanding of this when we're looking at it on CNN or reading it in the paper, and if you're the parent. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, what would have happened. I do remember that my boy Jonas at one point decided he was going to teach down in Colombia when they were kidnapping an American every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I remember he said very clearly to me, this really isn't your decision, Dad. Mm-hmm. It's really about me. And I said to him, I remember it very well. I said to him, look, Jonas, do you really think that? And he said, yes. I said, well, let me ask you this. If you get kidnapped, would you expect me to give up my house, my pension, my fortune, whatever I have?
Well, that's
for you. And he said, yes. And I said, it's about me.
That's a heavy discussion. Let's take a break here. Roundtable@WAMC.org is the email address. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Bardavon, presenting the Hudson Valley Philharmonic Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto, May 3rd, Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues, May 17th, Sheryl Crow, May 29th, bardavon.org. The Brattleboro Retreat, helping people with mental health and addiction problems to make new starts, brattlebororetreat.org. And Block Island Tourism, Block Island, Rhode Island, offering accommodations, entertainment, white sand beaches, bicycling, dining, shopping, history, nature, and more, blockislandinfo.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. 9:21 is the time. It's our panel today. Alan Shartok is here, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. And by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you to check out our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. You go to iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, install, mix, serve, and enjoy. It's a pretty good app. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, so we move on here. Deal is reached to ease tension in East Ukraine. This is from today's New York Times. The United States, Russia, Ukraine, and the European Union reached an agreement last night that called for armed pro-Russian bands in eastern Ukraine to surrender the government buildings they've seized and that outlined other steps to defuse a crisis that has rattled the international community. However, the self-declared leader of the pro-Russian separatists says, you know, it's not, that's it. Libby made a one-finger salute, and that's exactly what the pro-Russian separatists are saying right now. Where does this leave us? We start with you, Alan.
Well, the first question is, can anybody believe a thing that Putin says anymore? You can't. Now, the Russians are making noises. If anybody was listening to NPR this morning and they've said, everybody get out of these buildings and we expect you to do it. But there's the public presentation, and then there's what's going on behind the scenes. And the truth is, we don't know. We really don't know.
The president certainly seems skeptical, Mike.
Yes, he does. Alan, just to go back to you, what do you think the how do you think President Obama comes out in this at this point?
I don't see how he can do well, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's great that we're not going, we're not saber-rattling as McCain would have us do and the rest. But I don't see how he becomes a big winner with the American people. If this thing turns out to be a negotiated end to this nonsense, then when I think he'll come out quite well. But there will always be somebody who says you got to use your tanks and your planes and your bombs in this, and you're not, and you're a weak president. And by the way, that's what they always have said throughout our contemporary history about Democrats. Democrats are the weak ones, like FDR and World War II, or you know, Harry Truman, who was hell on the enemies of this country. But for some reason, that sticks, and I've never quite understood it.
Well, I would say that at least the president showed restraint and calm during this crisis. And if this is the way that it actually turns out, I think that he'll walk away. You know, I mean, I think he's looking good right now. I, you know, that's the way it appears to me.
Libby, Putin yesterday asserted, you know, the historic claims over Ukrainian territory and his right to send in Russian troops. So, Libby, I don't see how anything has changed by this.
Well, you know, I think Alan said, you know, there's inferred there's a public Putin and there's the private Putin. And I don't think, I think anything that will eventually lead to him taking over more land is what he wants. And I don't think that these guys who are in power in the Ukraine are separate from him. I think he probably knows exactly what they're doing and is feeding them information, power, money, whatever, in the back channel way. And he wants this to happen. He wants to destabilize the country so that they can walk in. And, you know, we don't know everything that's going on. But then there was a piece in this thing called The Diplomat.
Oh, about the opportunity that for America. Rosemary, who's not here this week, sent in to us, and it's
fascinating. But you need to have a whiteboard and with lines and arrows.
It's like Risk,
right? To be able to really understand and remember who all the players are and whether or not this is an opportunity for us, and it has to do with China. And
so it's very strange, you know. We get emails all the time here, and by the way, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org, that are saying, hey, listen, this is the beginning of World War III. We get people who are really ratcheted up about this, and then you see this news that hit yesterday, and you say, oh, well, there are some parallels here, perhaps. This is, again, everywhere, but from the New York Times, demands that Jews register in eastern Ukraine are denounced and denied. Worshippers at the Bet Menachem Mendel Synagogue in the eastern Ukrainian city of Donetsk, I believe is how you pronounce it, confronted a horrifying scene as they left a Passover service this week. Masked men on a sidewalk handing out leaflets demanding that Jews register and pay a fine or leave the area, witnesses said. They were supposedly signed, these leaflets, by Denis Pushilin, I believe is how you say it, the leader of the Donetsk People's Republic, the newly declared and unrecognized state that claims to represent ethnic Russians. They're denying that. However, this is disturbing, and I go to you first, Libby.
Oh, it's. I can tell you that, I mean, Facebook, the social media, the Twitter sphere, the Jewish community, you know, is very nervous about this. Oh, don't worry, it's a hoax. Well, you know what? The fact of the matter is it happened, And those who did this know what this triggers, and they know the history here and what has happened in the past when Jews were rounded up and summarily killed, 6 million of us. And so, you know, this is not a little joke. This is something that we're all watching and taking very seriously because, you know, we talked about it the other day. You have Kansas City. You have this. You have rising tide of anti-Semitism across Europe. You know, people still, whenever there's an economic downturn, people blame the Jews who control the banks and business, you know. And so we're always a target in that perspective. And, you know, we're in the Passover Easter week. This was quite the opportunity to get their point across, the people who did this, given that they gave these things out at Passover. We're right up on Easter. You know, the timing couldn't have been more opportune and suspect at the same time.
Alan, we only have about 2 minutes so here. You go first.
Yeah, no, but I think Libby's point is extremely well taken, and that is that we have to understand that somebody did this.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about which side did it.
That's right.
Somebody did it,
mm-hmm.
And that's disgusting. You know, somebody is playing somebody else. Now, I have to say, Ukraine does not, as Libby said, Ukraine does not have a stellar history when it comes to anti-Semitism and to what happened to Jews in that country during the worst period ever. So I do think that this does stir up a lot of stuff that has been lying around for a long time.
Now, there's the possibility that this indeed is propaganda coming from Russia, because Russia has said the
right.
new government there in Ukraine is
right.
anti-Semitic. So I think some of the separatists are saying, well, this is clear propaganda,
well,
Mike.
Well, clearly, I think that Libby put it so well and Alan echoed it so well, but it clearly whoever did this knew exactly what they're doing. They knew what buttons they were pushing, and they had an intent. They wanted to be inflammatory. Whatever, you know, whatever their ultimate motive is, it has really rattled and alarmed people and brought another level to this crisis.
There are so many layers of misinformation, propaganda,
yeah.
and strange psychological warfare that is going on here that it takes it to another level.
Yeah, because Putin's
and
not...
What we don't know. We don't know what backdoor stuff is going on between, for example, the United States and Russia right now.
Mm.
Believe me, it's going on, and we don't know it. So to analyze it is tough. And there are a lot of sides on this. Liam called it and said, a regular correspondent, why should anyone in Ukraine or anywhere else in the world accept a putsch government like Kiev installed by Washington? How can this agreement stick? Well, that's one side of it,
yeah.
but there are many other sides.
And we would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org is our email address. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We are at news time. We're going to take a break. We will be back on the panel. Sit back and relax, and we'll be back with you shortly. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:36 is the time. We are in the middle of our Roundtable panel for this Friday morning. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union and political consultant Libby Post. I'm Ray Graff. Alan, anything in the mailbag this morning?
Well, I'm looking right now as hard as I possibly can, and here is one that says, no, we didn't contemplate ex-KGB Putin's reaction to NATO expansion and all like that, and refers us to other articles. So a little bit of, you know, a sarcasm, I suppose.
All right.
That's it for right now. Yes,
okay.
That is it.
Well, a reminder, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. On we go. Again, from today's yep. New York Times, Clinton backer pleads guilty in a straw donor scheme. As Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton ran for president in 2008, one of her most enthusiastic financial supporters was Sant Singh Chatwal, an Indian-American hotel and restaurant owner whose relationship with the Clintons dated back years. Mr. Chatwal was a regular at Clinton campaign events in New York, a genial and gregarious presence. He had directed more than $200,000 through his businesses to her 2000 Senate campaign when unregulated soft money donations were still permissible. However, he has now pleaded guilty in a straw donor scheme. Mike Spain, I'll let you take it from here.
Well, the thing that occurred to me as I read this was there's now legal ways that he could have given this money or supported these candidates, including Hillary Clinton's 2008 candidacy for president. And by today's standards, probably done it legally. It seems almost disingenuous that they're going after someone for giving lots of money to a campaign when the Supreme Court is letting rich people give to every single congressional and Senate campaign in the country. And it's also letting, after the 2010 ruling on Citizens United, letting them raise tons of money through political action committees and back candidates essentially by campaigns that coincide with the candidates. So, I mean, yeah, it's a terrible thing. It's corruption. It just is. It shows you how money corrupts and the laws really ought to be clamped down.
So, Alan, as I understand the straw donor business, basically what Mr. Chatwell did and pleaded guilty to doing was, he gave the money back to donors for their contributions.
Yeah.
That's how the straw donor thing
right.
works.
Right. And a lot of people have been caught doing that. You know, I'm struck by Mike's comments, how much I think of Mike.
And always
listen to what he has to say because he's so much smarter than most of us, and he really is. But it occurs to me that let's say you change the law on attempted murder, just to go to absurdity, and you make it less penalty, and somebody committed the crime, or you change the law on anything. Does that mean that because it was illegal at the time, that you forget about prosecuting? I don't know. I don't know about that. You know what I mean, Mike?
Well, yeah. No, all I'm trying to say is that money corrupts. This was corruption, and now
he said so. By the way,
and the irony. The irony here is that today there's all kinds of ways that Mr. Chatwal could have supported the campaign with his own money the way he did back in 2008 and not broken the law. Doesn't that suggest that maybe we built loopholes into the law? This guy's getting nailed because he didn't have the loophole that is now available, and maybe we ought to close the loopholes.
Well, Libby and I were discussing before. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the prisons are filled with people who got screwed and point to other people who did worse.
Libby and I were speaking in the break about whether this would stick to Hillary Clinton in a potential presidential run. Libby says no. Go ahead, Libby.
Well,
right.
I think it will.
This already happened to
you
the
sure
Clintons.
You don't hope it will?
No, right. Not at all.
Right.
No.
This already happened to the Clintons. One of their fundraisers during Bill's presidency got thrown in jail for doing something that then was illegal, probably isn't illegal now. But no, I don't think it's going to stick. I think they'll try to do the negative campaigning around this and try to throw the bombs.
Certainly.
They'll put Benghazi back up there. They'll put this back up there. They'll put lots of things.
You'll hear Whitewater probably.
Right, right. You know, and if Clinton runs, they'll throw it right back because negative campaigning, as much as we all, it's like negative campaigning is like watching a train wreck. You know, you hate it, but you just can't keep yourself from watching it and in even getting a perverse sense of ooh from it, but the question remains now that she's going to be a grandmother, whether or not she's going to run.
Well, of course.
She's what, you think you don't run because you're going to be a grandmother?
Well, my partner Lynn keeps saying to me, the baby will be born by the time she has to really announce. So, and that might be the case, but I just wonder whether or not, becoming a grandmother, finally being home for more than 2 minutes at a time after being Secretary of State, she just might want to live a semi-normal life. You know, the problem with that is who would the Democrats have to be able to step up and win against Jeb Bush?
Come on, she's gonna run, and I'm gonna tell you right now.
Yeah, I know you're right.
Being a grandmother can only help her.
And she'll probably have that baby
it's
at
true.
The announcement.
It'll be a great.
She'll hold the baby on her lap as she announces.
She has a baby to kiss at every whistle stop.
Nah, she's unless the only way that she doesn't run is if there's some kind of health issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was sort of making the rounds when she fell down. Remember that whole thing and you hurt her head or something like that?
Well, we all fall down every so often.
Yeah. Yeah. We do. And so that is something that I think, you know, we make a lot out of. But my mother used to say when something would happen, she used to say, they're all doing it now.
Hmm.
And this business about the funneling of money one way or another, the wrapping of money, yeah, it hurts a little bit. But it doesn't hurt a lot because it's really on that guy. And by the way, this character said, you know, was quoted in the papers this morning, New York Times and other places are saying, that's how you get them to listen to you.
Right.
Okay. Just because they're all doing it is not necessarily a great defense.
But everybody's going to be able to do a lot more now that corporations are people and rich people can give as much money as they want.
All right, let's go to another form of possible corruption, and this is from Mike's own Times Union. Mike?
Well, today we have a story about the upcoming trial or retrial, which is set to begin on May 5th for former state Senate Majority Leader Joseph Bruno, who's 85 years old now. He's going to face charges in federal district court of two counts of violating the honest services provision of the law. And he's accused of committing mail fraud in connection with payments he received from a Loudonville businessman, Jared Abruzzese, back between 2004 and 2006. You may recall he was convicted in 2009 of two counts of honest services fraud for failing to disclose a conflict of interest. That was tossed out when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the crime must include a bribe or a kickback in exchange for Bruno's official action or influence.
A quid pro quo.
A quid pro quo, exactly. And there's now a public disagreement, as you would expect, between the prosecutors and the defense attorneys. In the brief that was filed by the prosecutors, the U.S. attorney asserted that the government need not prove that Senator Bruno promised to perform a particular act. The quid pro quo element is satisfied if the public official understood that as a result of the payment, he was expected to exercise particular kinds of influence on behalf of the payor as opportunities arose.
Alan talks about this all the time.
Well, this is ridiculous. I mean, you know, everybody who goes to the legislature walks up there, you know this, Mike, and I know it, and gives the money. Why are they giving the money? Why did anybody give Andrew Cuomo $33 million?
Right.
They do it because they think they're going to get something back for it. Now, are you telling me, if I'm hearing this correctly, are you telling me that just because they gave the money without a quid pro quo being specific, in other words, if you give me this money on a wire somewhere, if you give me this money, I will do this for you. That is a crime. But everything else that goes on in the legislature, which is a house of ill repute if there ever was one, it would come into this under that definition. That's absurd.
Well, you do sound like William Dreyer and E. Stuart Jones, the two lawyers who are defending Senator Bruno in this retrial. They're making that case. But, you know, this involves $80,000 that Senator Bruno received while he was in office for consultant fees for his private business consulting business from this Loudonville businessman, Jared Abruzzese.
Right.
And for which there's little evidence that he performed any, according to the prosecutors. And then he did steer $500,000 in state grants to a company that Abruzzese helped to found. And Abruzzese was trying to take over, along with some others, the state racing industry. And Bruno had a lot of influence there. So these are the things that will be repeated in this trial. It probably won't be the long, drawn-out trial it was back in 2009. It's going to begin in U.S. District Court in Albany on May 5th.
Look, I have great regard for our federal prosecutors. I really do. I think they're doing a great job. This is a very strange one. And can I say something, Mike, that you may not like, and my friend Rex might not like? I think that the TU has had a horse in this race. And speaking of horses, why don't you tell everybody about the famous horse and Abruzzese? Because that's the real interesting thing.
That's right. That's part of the prosecution's case. They're contending that during all of this, Bruno was able to sell a horse to Abruzzese, and it was a virtually worthless horse, but Abruzzese paid $80,000 for it. And so the value of the horse is going to come into play in this trial.
And when asked about it, Abruzzese said,
"Well, tell me."
As I remember the testimony, he said, "Yeah, you know, maybe that was payback or something like that. I don't remember exactly the right
single words.
But he did, in fact, say. And when we did the story, I had them play, I got a horse right here, and Paul Revere in the background.
The musical interlude. Libby Post.
Well, it just seems to me, you know, this is conviction based on a wink and a nod. And, there's just a little too much of that going around at times in our justice system for me to be
a lot
comfortable.
Of it.
Right. And most of it's not done, you know, for people like Joe Brunero, but, you know, look at what happened in the South during the 60s, and lots of convictions of people who shouldn't have been convicted, and all done with a wink and a nod because of people's politics. So,
Look at what happens every day in the legislature.
Right, it's all
that's what
one
the
big,
whole meat market's about.
Right, it's one
you would
big
need a lot
rink.
More.
Right,
you would need a lot more prisons. You don't have to go down south. You don't have to go anywhere else. You could just say right here. That's why the lobbyists make such a lot of money, because they help steer campaign contributions and everything else to these guys.
They know how to wink.
And not. Now, and of not. Course, Bruno's 85. He's been tried That's once. Right. It was thrown out by the Supreme Court.
After a Supreme Court ruling that right. wasn't directly on his case, but it did affect the whole way that honest services are used in a conviction.
So he's 85. The feds must feel very strongly about this to do this again.
Right. I mean, what we don't know exactly, but it seems you can surmise that they were unable to come to any kind of a plea deal, and that the senator wants to clear his name and has insisted all along that he is innocent, and that is that's his position, and he's holding to it.
The email address here is...
I just want to know, I think of every day when I come in to Albany and I pass the big sign, you know, for the Joe Bruno Stadium, I know that, you know, they would have taken that down if he was guilty, wouldn't they?
Well, the Ed McDonough gym still stands at HVCC, so you never know.
All right, then. Roundtable@WAMC.org is our email address. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Bein Communications, strategic communications, public affairs, and crisis communications for 25 years, serving clients throughout the Northeast. BeinCommunications.com. Union Institute and University, Brattleboro, Vermont. Offering an online and graduate-level certificate in alcohol and drug abuse counseling, welcoming applications for fall term, myunion.edu. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York, showing Hollywood, American independent, and foreign films, and presenting London's National Theater Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily, spectrum8.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC on a Friday morning, 9:50.
Yes.
What is the time? Alan Shartok.
Obstreperous
Alan Shartok.
Yes.
He's very feisty this
he is.
Morning.
Between the two of you, I almost had to stop this show. It's quite something. Mike Spain is here, Libby Post, and boy, some really exciting news from...
And by the way, we got lots of letters. I just wanted you to know.
All right, well,
that
let's save those for the last couple of moments here. We want to talk about another one in the Times Union, Fab 8.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about Senator Bruno, and, you know, he was instrumental with Governor Pataki and other state leaders in getting the chip plant built in southern Saratoga County. That is now called Fab 8. It's now owned by a company, an international company called Global Foundries. And the big news by our technology writer, Larry Rulison, is that Global Foundries is going to start making the next generation of computer chips there in contract with Samsung, which is the giant Korean electronics company that makes most of the smartphones in the world today. But the interesting thing that I found is that the current standard for a microchip is 20 nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a nanometer is a unit of length in the metric system equal to 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter.
Yeah.
So instead of 20, the new three-dimensional transistors will be at the 14 nanometer level. So they'll be even tinier, but because they're 3D, they'll have more surface area. They can be smaller but have more functionality. And it's believed that these are the chips that Apple will embrace in the next generation of iPhones.
Well,
yes. Anyway, Alan, you have...
Well, as Dr. Elena Padilla, my dissertation advisor, would put it, she said, they better, they just better. Because all this money is being invested in this last technology. And if they're not up on it, they're screwed. Well, and so you better believe that they have to be, especially the research component, has to be up there.
And there is. There's a lot being spent on research. Larry Story talks about how they're hiring hundreds of new workers at this plant. They originally were pushing for 2,200 people to work there. Now it's going up to nearly 3,000 in the next 8 months, and it shows a $10 billion investment. It was originally a $2.3 billion or $3.2 billion investment. You know, it's easy, hard to keep track. It's easy to mix it up, but it's much bigger.
We better hope that nobody else comes along in another state and says, we'll put $11 billion to build you guys' stuff.
That's a good point. You know, what does this mean as far as jobs? That's the bottom line around here.
Big. It's huge. They're going to hire another 800 people. It's going to be up to 3,000 people. I mean, it's fulfilling.
And where are they coming from?
Many are from the capital region. They are going internationally for certain kinds of engineers, but there's lots of good jobs up there. Local colleges are working with them to train technicians. And then there's the ancillary benefits of all the people that move here have to...
Where are they going to eat?
Right, where are they going to eat?
Where are they going
to go to the dentist?
Right.
Where are they going to go to school? You name it. So it looks like, regardless of the outcome of the May 5th trial, Senator Bruno's vision is being fulfilled in this Global Foundries plant that's really fueling the economy of this region.
Nice tie-in. Well done, Mike. All right, Alan, what do we have in the mailbag?
Okay, campaign reform from Ken. I'm having trouble understanding why the panel is not showing its collective outrage at the fact that the campaign reform is losing instead of gaining ground. Since when did the word rich get plugged in before the word people in the phrase of for and by the people? That's one. And then there's one from Ed who says, the notice to the Jews seems to be an obvious hoax and provocation. This is diversion from the undeniable fact, check it out, that the current government in Kiev has at least five ministers, including the Minister of Defense, Security, and the Environment, as well as the Attorney General and Deputy Prime Minister, who are members of a neo-Nazi fascist party. They are offshoots of the Ukrainian movement who fought with the Nazis, and on and on. And then Ken, I'm not sure, is putting out what to discredit others in Ukraine, but I do feel threats to ID from Jews is part and parcel of the propaganda campaign that puts racist posters of President Obama on the walls of the so-called People Republic in Donetsk. And then I can't read the whole thing because it's a little too long.
Okay.
And then Hillary says, when has anyone ever asked if a male candidate would decline to run due to becoming a grandfather? You may as well have discussed what Hillary was wearing when Chelsea announced her pregnancy.
And pants.
And all and on.
Well, I think, Libby, you were being a little tongue-in-cheek when you said, will she run for president as a
But becoming a grandparent does cause you to look down the road and think about your life and whether it's a grandfather or grandmother.
Yeah. I mean, if she won, then she just have the grandchild to the White House.
How many grandchildren do I have? I have six.
You have six grandchildren?
I do.
That can be expensive.
Yeah. Well, they're not my. I'm not paying the bills. My children.
Yeah, but you
are.
Have to buy the presents.
Yes, that's right. Happily.
Well, Alan, what else do you have? Anything else?
Shed presents. Hillary Clinton, first woman president and first grandmother, sounds like a winner.
I agree.
Okay.
You know, the Russians have had a long history of anti-Semitism, of course.
Was that tied to the Hillary email? I'm confused. Is that another email?
The email. What is the state of anti-Semitism in Russia itself at present? A very good question. Okay. Hillary Clinton, that's another issue. First woman president and first grandmother sounds like a winner. She's really the first grandmother? No.
Well, she'd be the first woman president.
Oh, I see.
And
would
who happens
either.
To be a grandmother.
All right. We've sorted that out. Hey, panel, thanks a lot. This week has been a lot of fun. Libby Post, thank you for being here multiple times. And Mike Spain, thank you for being here multiple times. And Alan, you are here all the time, and thank you. And everybody have a great weekend.
And thank you, Ray.
Like it or not.
Thank you, Ray, indeed.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you, Ray.
If you are among those who celebrate Easter, have a very happy Easter this weekend. And make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. You go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC and install, and you can always email us. We'd love to hear from you, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan will not be able to read any more emails today, but
no.
If you email over the weekend, potentially he could read them.
It all gets put on the page, I believe. Isn't that right?
If you comment on the page, which you can also do. You can go to our roundtable page and at the WAMC.org and make your comments there, and they'll be there for all to see.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for today, and that's it for this week on the panel. Thanks all. But fear not, there are two more sterling hours of the program ahead, which will commence shortly.